podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. So glad you're here. Happy holidays, by the way. This is the show that ran on Saturday, December 14th, 2019, on the Premier Networks, episode 1652. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Brave. Brave is the browser reimagined. Switch now to get unmatched speed and privacy and stop trackers from following you. Save battery life and earn rewards by opting into privacy-respecting ads. Brave is free and easy to switch to. Go to brave.com/twit and switch to Brave today. And by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean offers the simplest, most developer-friendly cloud platform that scales as you grow. Get started today for free with a free $50 credit at do.co/twit. Well, hello. How are you? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Hey, hey, hey. Time to talk computers. Yeah, the internet. Yeah. Smartphones, smartwatches, augmented reality, virtual reality, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you could still reach me. It's just, you know, you got to call using Skype or something like that. 888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. 888-827-5536. We have a website. It's free. Open to all. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. If you'd like to, it's free. As I said, no sign up. If you hear something on the show and you say, oh, what is that? Don't have to write it down. No, not necessary. You need merely go to TechGuyLabs.com and it has already been written down for you. So that's a nice feature. We also put audio and video from the show after the fact. You can dig through all the past shows, all 1,652 of them. Well, today's 1652, so 1,651 of them until later. So let's see what happened this week. This is the one that worries me the most. You know that you have Google on your phones. If you have an Android phone, it's built in. If you have an iPhone, it's probably there in some form or fashion, right? Last year and the year before, actually this year and last year, there were some serious arson incidents in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. How does that relate? Well, listen, cost $50,000 in property damage. No humans, but there was some severe damage. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives investigating went to Google. And this is from Forbes, by the way. And said, hey, we would like there's two different search warrants. We'd like to know which Google customers were located within that 29,387 square meters for 9 hours around those four separate arson incidents. So if you've got Google Maps on your phone, who doesn't, right? If you've got Google on your phone, if you have an Android phone, unless you've specifically turned off location history, Google knows where you've been. By the way, this week Google announced that they are on 1 billion phones. So that means Google has the location history for 1 billion people. I'd bet a significant percentage of Americans. The ATF went to Google. Google found 1,494 different devices that met that search warrant and gave it, handed it over. Said, here. It's yours. I guess they could have fought it, but it was a legitimate search warrant and Google had the information. So I guess, okay. They call these reverse location searches because the police don't have a suspect. They just want to know everybody who was in that area, a fairly large area, every Google user within that area at that time. for 9 hours, and they got 1,500 people. Then they go through the list. They decide which of those devices they want to know more about, and then they can get things like, they ask Google, and Google will give them name, email address, which Google services they used. This is, if you ask me, a really important event. And it's not a unique event. It happens. And it's unique in the sense that it couldn't have happened until now, until we all had smartphones in our pockets. We've talked before about how the smartphone really knows everything about you. In some ways, should be protected kind of somehow specially because your whole life's in there. Forget a diary. And there may be diary information in there, too. I keep a journal on my smartphone. But there's also everywhere you've been, everyone you've called, every text you've received. There's tons of material in there, your bank accounts, whatever you put on your phone. And in the case of the location history, Google knows. Google knows. I feel like, what do you think? I'll tell you what I think. This is what they, in law enforcement, call a fishing, maybe defense attorneys call a fishing expedition. We don't have a suspect. We don't have somebody we can investigate. Let's round up the usual suspects. Round them all up. Who was there? We're going to talk to every one of them. And by the way, of the 1,500 people, only one of them committed that crime. That means 1,499 people. Well, all right, 1,493 people, innocent people's information was handed over. And they've done this before. The use of, Forbes asked a professor at Berkeley Law, said the use of innocence information is going to be inherent in investigations. That's natural. If you've got footage of a bank robber, you've got everybody who was in the bank, including the robbers. But this makes me extremely nervous. It's the beginning of a surveillance state, and it's happening in other countries, and it's starting to happen here. In fact, we talk a lot about how, it's terrible what China is doing, and the Chinese government is demanding that everybody who has a smartphone in China register their face through the smartphone. So they're collecting a massive database of face recognition information for everybody in China. And we go, isn't that terrible? It never could happen here. Well, maybe. Maybe not. We've got the technology. Just something to be aware of. And if this bothers you, or if you're an arsonist and you just want to go without being detected, you can turn off location information. Google doesn't have to have that information. But then it will only go on, I guess, when you open Maps up. You could say, don't give Maps any location information. Both the iPhone does this really well. You've probably noticed this if you have a late model iPhone and you're running iOS 13, the latest version. It will say, hey, Google Maps has grabbed your location in the background 32 times over the last 12 hours. Do you want them to continue doing that? And you have the chance to say, no, only while I'm using the app, which you do need, obviously, for a Maps app. But why should it be gathering information without that? I've liked that location history because it's boring day to day. I drive to work, drive home, drive to work, drive home. But when I'm traveling, for instance, when I'm on vacation, to see all the places I visited on a map, that's cool. And it does it in a little kind of like animated thing as I'm walking around the map. It's kind of cool. But now I'm a little concerned. Maybe we all should be. Get this, AirPods. Apple's little silly. I thought when I first saw those, these are the silliest things I ever saw. Nobody's going to wear these. You look dorky with them hanging out of your ear, that little thing hanging out. It looks like something's dribbling out of your ear. $4 billion. $4 billion in AirPods sold. No, not last year. Last quarter. Last quarter. Last 3 months. They're selling more than $1 billion of AirPods a month. Oh, I know. Some wag is going to say, yes, because people keep losing them. They do fall out of your ear. But wow. Apple Watch? $5.2 billion. $5.2 billion. Apple's not saying this, but analysts looking at Apple's numbers are figuring it out, and I think these analysts are very accurate at a company called Asimco. So that's an amazing number. And then Samsung said, and then took it back, we've sold a million of those silly Galaxy Folds. You know, the phones that they fold in half, and when they first released them, they had horrible problems, and they re-released them. Samsung Electronics president Yong Son said, we've sold a million of these. There's a million people. By the way, they're a $2,000 phone. $2,000 phone. So 2,000 times a million is a bunch. It's, what is that? Is that 2 billion? That's a lot. It's a lot of money in phones. Folding phones. And then I saw a statistic that said only 10% of Americans would buy a phone that costs more than $1,000 or have bought a phone that costs more than $1,000. $2,000. How about that? Well, it is a big country, a big, not just big country, big world, right? They must be selling them somewhere else too. All right. There is a lot to talk about. That's all the news that fits. I mean that fits because I have a lot more stories. Maybe we'll get to them a little bit later on the show. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. TechGuyLabs.com, the website. Everything you need is right there. Kim Schaffer is here. She is laboring mightily to get your call on the air, and we'll talk to you next. Smile for your close-up, Ms. Kim. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. Schmaffer. Hello, Kimmy Schmaffer. How are you today?
Good. That's one I hadn't heard before, but I've had a lot of butchering to the name.
Well, we're playing the theme song from the fabulous TV show, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Mm-hmm. What is that on? Is that on
Netflix?
Netflix, okay. Yes. And we just adapted this because you're the unbreakable Kimmy Schaffer. So
I've been told.
I'm mixing Schaffer with Schmidt to make Schmaffer. How was your week? Good week?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Very good week.
I have been informed by our Amazon Echo guru, Dr. Mom, that I can now put Samuel L. Jackson on my Echo.
Yeah, I heard that during the break, and it sounds like that broke you. You were not unbreakable.
Well, it's hard.
It's not so easy to make happen, huh?
It's hard. She says, Leo, I sent you an email explaining the process.
Of course.
Just
you did.
Go ahead. So I will figure it out. But I have to warn you, mm-hmm. There's two Samuel L. Jacksons on your Amazon Echo now. One normal and one like the one on the Snakes on a Plane movie, if you know what I mean.
There ain't no.
Yeah. He says a lot of bad words.
Yeah. Well, that's the one I want to hear.
But it's the one I can't play on the radio.
No, but you could play it during the break, can't you?
I wonder if it's easy to switch back and forth.
Probably not.
Like, so,
probably
Samuel, clean it up. Yeah. Clean up your language, Samuel.
Gonna put soap in your mouth.
Gonna put soap
like
in
your mother.
Gonna put soap in your mouth. Yeah. What are you? Raised in a barn? Yeah. So, like you, I want to hear the profane one. But Dr. Mom says the explicit one's hysterical.
I'm sure it is.
I wonder if the, I'll try it off the air.
That would probably be for the best.
Yeah.
You don't want poor Laura to have
poor Lady Laura, she's got her hand hovering over the magic button.
She's like, oh no, what's about to happen?
You said a bad word button. Which, by the way, not only cuts the bad word out of our show, it shocks the seat I'm sitting in. So,
that's a good new feature.
Yeah.
I want a button too.
So if you suddenly hear me, you'll know something happened. Who have we prepared for our show today?
Let's go to Lewis in Hollywood, who wants to talk to you about one of, you know, Mr. Musk's projects.
Mr. Musk.
Mr. Musk.
When you say it that way, it doesn't sound so good, does it? Hello, Mr. Musk. There's a call for you online too, Mr. Musk. Thank you. Thank you, Kim.
You're welcome.
And hello, Lewis. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome.
Mr. President.
Hello.
I'd like to ask for your thoughts concerning Bond villain Elon Musk's evil genius plan to destroy ground-based astronomy.
Oh, you're talking about his Starlink project.
Starlink project.
I have mixed feelings about Starlink, because on the one hand, I really like the idea of gigabit speed internet on every corner of the planet, because then I could do the radio show anywhere I felt like it.
Well, you're talking about between 12,000 and 42,000 non-geocentric orbit satellites.
Yeah.
They can autonomously change their orbit.
Yeah. Well, they have to. They have to adjust it because, you know, orbits decay and so forth.
Right. And they are already interfering with visual astronomy, and because of the frequencies they use, it looks like they'll be interfering with radio astronomy as
Oh, that's
well.
Interesting. Well, of course, they've received FCC approval, so they've already launched. They've had a couple of launches, and what you've seen, and many maybe have seen, is the image of the Starlink satellites as they're deploying. So when they're first launched, and it's a single rocket that launches 60 of them, and when they're first launched, all 60 are obviously in the same area. In fact, you could see a line across the sky. And these, you only will see these as the sun hits them, so in a certain angle. But if imagine if you had 42,000, and these are low Earth orbit, so they're very close to the surface, low Earth orbit satellites. There's only 120 of them up there right now, that it could conceivably make it hard to do astronomical observations. Now, people who use these big telescopes do what we call time exposures. They will expose over minutes in order to get these distant dark galaxies. And you might say, well, aren't the stars moving? They are, so they have very special servo mechanisms to, at the same exact speed, move the telescope so that the stars don't move. They can get a good exposure. And already, even without Starlink, it's not at all unusual in a night's photography to get a number of ruined pictures because a satellite is going through the image, and it looks like a streak in the image, even if the satellites are dim. Imagine many, many more. And by the way, it's not just Elon Musk.
Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon. Jeff Bezos, another one of our mad geniuses. We literally live in a comic book world now where you have infinitely rich evil geniuses or good geniuses, depending on your point of view.
I think we need to assign a 00 agent to take care of all these.
In their secret mountain lairs launching these things. And Elon's getting nuttier and nuttier. He's starting to sound like, you know, yep, Ernst Stavro Blofeld or something. So So one thing that SpaceX has said is that they do want to make these dimmer. So they're looking into ways of making them dimmer, maybe painting them with black matte finish paint like a nice Model X. I don't know. I don't know. This is an interesting conundrum, which we'll talk about at another time since I've run out of time already. Honestly, I feel like, I don't know. If we don't, even if we said to Elon and Bezos, no, you can't do it, the Chinese will for sure do it. And I have a feeling this is going to be other countries too. And so this is going to happen. And there is a benefit to it, but astronomers are really not thrilled about it all.
Yeah, someone talking about it earlier this week said that it was a prime example of Jeff Goldblum's character from Jurassic Park. But yeah, just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do it.
Yeah. They talked to the president of SpaceX, Gwynne Shotwell, about this. I'm looking at the Space.com article. She said, get this, no one thought of this.
Yeah.
We didn't think of it. The astronomy community didn't think of it. Oh, I bet they did, Gwynne.
Yeah, And no one knew that healthcare could be that complicated.
How could it be so complicated? So they are, she said, now, you know, we don't want to, obviously, we don't want to block astronomy. So we're going to somehow make these dimmer. There's only 60 up there now out of the 42,000.
122. He's doing,
I'm sorry, they've done two launches, so there's 120, yeah.
Yeah.
They're going to have, the next ones will have a special coating. But they'll still blot this. They'll still be there.
And they'll still be interfering with, unless they figure out another way, they'll still be interfering with radio astronomy because something I didn't know is there are radio silent preserves around radio telescopes so that broadcast signals don't interfere with the signals the radio telescopes are using. But you can't do that with 12,000 satellites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Problem.
Mm.
All right, sir. Happy holidays.
Hey, great to talk to you. Thank you, Lewis.
Thank you. Take care.
See ya. Bye. Great question. On the other hand, I love the idea. Maybe is this the only way, though, we could get gigabit high-speed internet to every corner of the planet? Maybe there's other ways we could do this. Google has balloons, Project Loon. Same idea. Facebook had. They stopped it. Project Aquila, which was little drones with satellite with the internet. Scott Wilkinson's our home theater geek. He's here each week to celebrate Hanukkah in Santa Monica. No, we were just talking about that. When is Hanukkah? It's soon, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty late this year. I think it starts on the 22nd or 23rd, something like that.
Yeah, so. You still can celebrate it in Santa Monica, as far as I'm concerned. Scott is also a contributor to TechHive.com. How did Tuba Christmas go?
Oh, Tuba Christmas went great. We had over 100 tubas in the ensemble, over 1,000 people in the audience.
Oh my God! And really, 1,000?
1,000 people in the audience. Yep.
Holy
and they
moly.
Sang. At Tuba Christmas, the tubas play the carols once, and then the audience sings them the second time. And they sang so well and so loud.
Nice.
It was great.
Well, you kind of have to sing loud if
great.
You're competing.
Believe
tubas.
It or not, there was somebody tailgating in the parking lot before the show.
Wow. it's become an event.
It's a real thing, yeah.
That's really
I'm very
exciting.
Happy to say. Yeah.
Scott leads the Tuba Christmas, 100 tubas strong. Imagine.
Yes.
Silent night.
On 100 tubas.
On 100 tubas.
Actually, I dedicated it this year to my mother's memory, who she died 2 or 3 days after last year's Tuba Christmas. And so Silent Night was especially poignant for me and many people in the audience. My sister was there.
Was it one of her favorites?
It was. Oh, yeah.
Who is? Yes. Whose isn't?
Who doesn't love Silent Night? Come on.
Well, thank you, Santa. And I hope everybody listening, I hope you all got to go because that's awesome.
I sure do. I sure do, too.
Yeah.
Well, listen, I wanted to take a moment to kind of do a year-end thing because next week, which when I would normally do it, I will have just seen the new Star Wars movie.
Ooh.
So I'm going to want to report back on that.
Ooh, yes. We're going to go see it Christmas Eve.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. We thought we should get out of the house to give Santa space to decorate. So
yeah. Well, I'm going on Friday. It's
good.
It's
that's opening started, day, right? Or no, Thursday.
That's opening day. Well, Thursday night is actually opening night, but that was already sold out. So.
Of course.
I got the best seat I could on Friday. So I'll look forward to giving you a report then. No spoilers, of course, but, you know, it's the end of, 20, 30 years of... Since 1977, when it all began, so 30, 40 years.
Nice.
So it's going to be quite the thing. Anyway, so we're near the end of the year.
Yeah.
And so I thought, you know, let's talk a little bit about what 2019 was about in terms of audio video and what we might see in 2020.
Okie dokie.
Certainly, we saw 4K, or what's more rightly called UHD, Ultra HD TVs, and become nearly ubiquitous. I mean, you can't buy a TV that isn't 4K, except in the very, very low end of each manufacturer's lineup. I mean, they're just all 4K, even the smaller ones. And we're seeing, you know, plenty of 4K content now. At the beginning, of course, there wasn't much, but it has increased greatly, mostly through streaming. We don't have it over the air yet, and we don't have it over cable or satellite. Well, a little bit, but not much. We do have a 4K Blu-ray, which has quite a bit of content now. So we've got a lot of content in 4K, and that's good because you can't really buy a TV unless it's 4K these days. And also TV sizes increased greatly. The average buyer now is looking at 65-inch TVs. Used to be 55 and 50, and now it's 65. And next year it's going to get even bigger, I bet. And prices fell dramatically. I mean, geez, you saw the Black Friday prices. It was unbelievable. You could get a 75-inch TV for $750. It's like, what? Now, you know, at those super low prices, the quality is only going to be okay. I would advocate spending a little more and getting a higher quality. But I don't understand how these TV prices could fall so fast, because the margins, the profit margins at the retailers are already razor thin. So how can they continue to make prices fall that way? I really don't know, but it's an obvious trend. The other thing that I saw a lot of in 2019, we all saw a lot of in 2019, is streaming services and what could easily be called balkanization, right? You used to have Netflix and Amazon Video, and now each network has their own streaming service. Disney has its own streaming service, Apple TV Plus, CBS All Access, HBO Now. AT&T, by the end of the year, is going to have 5 different streaming services.
Their DirecTV Now is a flop, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, and it's now been rebranded AT&T TV.
That's
now
how you know it's a flop.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, pay no attention to the DirecTV Now. This is something
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly.
You could really add up. This really was, I think, the year when streaming services went crazy. And the Peacock is coming next year, the NBC
yep,
service.
Exactly. The balkanization is going to continue next year. We've got NBC Universal Peacock. We've got HBO Max.
Max!
Which is more than HBO Now. Discovery is launching a BBC channel, even though BBC already has their own channel also.
Hey.
It's like, what?
Of course, the point of all of this is to recoup the losses to people cutting the cable. It ends up costing as much, if not more.
If not more. I think more, ultimately.
Yeah.
So that is a little bit of a disturbing trend. I sure would like to see some way to be able to get exactly what you want, you know, under one roof, so to speak, rather than under 10.
Isn't this funny? Because all we could ask for during the days of cable was unbundle. I don't want to buy 15 channels just to get Turner Classic Movies.
Right.
Now that
right.
they have unbundled, all we could say is, can you please re-aggregate? Because I don't like a la carte. The best solution is to buy each show individually.
Yes, exactly.
And honestly, you can almost do that, because most shows, you won't get to see The Mandalorian right away. But eventually, Disney Plus will probably allow that to be available on iTunes and Google and so forth, and you can buy it.
Well, will they? Will they give
well,
up
they
that
might
revenue?
Not. Yeah, they might not. They might say, well, you got to buy Disney Plus if you want to watch
exactly.
The Mandalorian.
Exactly. I think that's the trend we're seeing.
That's not good. I think
it's
it'll hurt
good.
Them in the long run. That's the
in the long run,
did you
sure.
see the numbers for Disney Plus? It is a very successful launch.
Yeah. As far as I saw, they broke the Disney Plus server when it first launched. it crashed.
Broke the server. Well, I think they also have huge sign-up numbers, the largest for any streaming service at this point. I mean, it really has been a huge... They said, I think Variety said, and this was that's a month ago, 10 million sign-ups after launch day. So,
The
analysts said that maybe they'd get 8 million in the first year. So 10 million on launch day times $7. It's pretty good.
That's pretty damn good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And given that they weren't, you know, this is incremental income. Scott, your work is found at techhive.com. And of course, we love having you here next week. Oh, you know, let me ask. Hey, computer, ask Samuel L. Jackson how it was working in Star Wars. Nothing.
Nothing.
Story.
Oh, he's not. He's tight-lipped until the show.
Computer,
until it releases.
Stop.
I turned on Samuel Jackson, but now he's getting a little shy. I'll ask him when we get back. Leo,
no, he's
Laporte,
under embargo.
You may be the tech guy. More to come right after this. Thanks, Scott.
You bet.
Yeah, I must have done the wrong
installation.
Yeah, let me try this here. Because I turn it on, you say, "Hey, computer, introduce me to Samuel L. Jackson," and then it does that. But how do you get it to that? "Hey, computer, ask Samuel L. Jackson what it was like to work in Star Wars."
Here's your story.
No. "Hey, computer, stop. Computer, exit."
I can do that on Hulu.
Oh,
NBC.
Shut up. Computer.
Food Network.
All right. I'm putting it to sleep. Bye-bye. You lose.
I got something.
I can do the weather. Computer, ask Samuel L. Jackson what the weather is going to be like.
I can do that on Hulu, NBC, Prime Video, Food Network Kitchen, or Tubi, free movies and TV. Which would you like?
Computer, exit.
I can do that on Hulu.
Look at the thing. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I'm going to kill Dr. Mom. She told me that I could get Samuel L. Jackson in my Echo, and I did. And it was only 99 cents. You choose from a explicit or non-explicit voice. I chose the non-explicit because we're on the radio here. The way you do it, by the way, it's not too hard. You can do it from the Echo. Just say, "Echo, introduce me to Samuel L. Jackson." And then it'll go through a whole rigmarole, tell you the things you can do, and say, "You want me to charge you a buck?" And you say, "Yeah," and then that's that. Computer, ask Samuel what the weather's going to be like. So he'll read us the weather.
Cloudy with a high chance of me. Currently in Petaluma, it's 55
cloudy with a high chance
Fahrenheit
of me.
With clear skies and sun. Today, you can expect lots of clouds, with a high of 57 degrees and a low of 40 degrees.
Computer, stop. So that's kind of cool. That's kind of, I guess. Whatever you do, don't say, "Computer, ask Samuel what it was like to be in Star Wars." Because he'll go on.
Here's your story.
No, stop. Echo, computer, stop. You got to ask it just right, I guess. Keep getting something else. I will turn on the explicit version once the kids have gone to bed, and we can listen to Samuel. Apparently, the Echo voice isn't always Samuel L. Jackson. Just you have to kind of explicitly ask for him. But you can ask him what it was like to make Star Wars, what his favorite vacation spot is. He's quite garrulous. He could tell jokes. I could try this. Computer, ask Samuel to sing Jingle Bells. Let's see if this one works.
Okay, let's get merry and bright.
Oh, dear.
Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Oh,
jingle
dear.
All the way.
Computer, stop. The only good thing about this is rarely in life do you get to interrupt Samuel L. Jackson. 8888, ask Leo. He'll also, if you ask him about deliveries, apparently he'll begin, because you know you can only get these movie stars to record so many phrases, and then the female voice will take over and give you the actual deets, stuff like that. You can ask, this one's kind of cool, I would turn on the explicit one for this. You can ask Samuel, if your kids are misbehaving, you could ask Mr. Jackson to tell him to go to bed. I think our 17-year-old would enjoy that one. We'll save that for him. 8888, ask Leo. One good detail of all this, if you pay 99 cents, it works on all your Echoes. If you have more than one, you only pay once. And apparently, it's a one-time fee. You don't have to renew it. I imagine this is the beginning of a lot more celebrity voices. You can play rock, paper, scissors with Mr. Jackson, all kinds of stuff. Line three, Thomas Riverside. Hello, Thomas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I've moved to a new state, and I am locked out at a Gmail account that I need to access.
Uh-oh.
I'm caught in an endless circle, going back and forth, trying to recover it to other emails. Gmail says that they cannot verify that it's me. Their solution is for me to go to a familiar place and log in. The familiar place I came from is 1,000 miles away.
You're kidding. So because you're from a different location, and of course Google knows, everything knows where your IP address is, even though you used your password to log in, they said no.
Yes, and then there's assumptions made that perhaps I violated some protocol within Gmail, and so there's no definitive judgment coming down on that, only an endless loop of we need time, we can't do it, we can't verify it's you. I'm getting authentication sent to other emails and providing that information, but I can't break through this endless cycle. And I need this account back.
Yeah, no kidding. So this is Gmail and all the Google services are really great. They're useful, but they only exist at the pleasure of Google. And as you can see, things go wrong. And then the real problem is, unless you're a G Suite user, a paying user, which businesses sometimes do, there's no number to call. There's no person to call. You might try, but good luck. And I think you probably already tried.
Exactly.
So you had set an alternate address for recovery.
Two.
Yeah. So, by the way, this is something I tell everybody to do, and you can do it in the security settings. Set a phone number and an alternate address for recovery. That way, if somebody guesses your password or whatever, you could still recover your account. Or this happens. But you're saying even when you have them send the recovery email to that address and you click the link, it doesn't recover it.
Yes. And I'm wondering if somehow my account was hacked and they used that to violate the policies, and now I'm locked out and we'll never get back in.
Yeah, you know, and I know why you're calling me, because good luck getting somebody at Google.
Call them for me.
I'll have no more success than you. We had a caller last year, I think, or maybe earlier this year, who said the same thing had happened to her. She actually went down to the Google office in Irvine and banged on the door. That didn't work either.
Can you ask Samuel?
Samuel might be some help.
There you go.
So,
I think, you know,
the issue is no longer that you moved or that you can't recover it, because you have all of that, but something they've decided, and this is a unilateral decision, they've decided that you did something wrong, probably send spam with your account. And it could be that you triggered that accidentally by sending out a bunch of emails in a short period of time. You'd have to send a lot. Or that you're right, somebody hacked your account somehow. This is a mess.
Yes.
This is a mess. You've gone through, I presume you've gone through all the recovery channels, and none of that has worked.
Yes, that's correct. They say they can't verify that I'm the owner.
And you're using, if you use your phone or a laptop that's already been logged into Gmail, you can then, in theory, they can see that that is an previously authorized device. That would be enough.
Yes, and I thought about that, and I was using my phone over the internet, and then I took it off the internet to go over the Verizon, and that didn't work either.
Now it doesn't work. Yeah, it probably cleared that. Yeah. Oh man. I mean, I'm looking at the recovery process and Google account help, you know, but I know you've looked at that and you've already, and you know, they ask you things like, when did you create your account? Who is the, you know, some people you emailed? When did you last log in using a password? All that stuff. Stuff no one would reasonably know.
Exactly.
But I presume you've done as much as you can around that. I don't know where else to go in that case. And this is a real pitfall. It's not unique to Google. Except that, you know, you have a Facebook email and maybe you have a Yahoo email. But the problem is that people tend to use Gmail as their main email, their only email. And there's no one to call. There's no support. I stopped doing that, not because I hate Google, although I'm a little nervous about Google, but I stopped doing that and use a paid email service for that reason, because I know I can reach them on the phone. I can get support. I'm giving them money every year, so they are going to respond. Because Gmail's free, Google doesn't put a lot of money into support. Have you tried calling a support number?
I can't even find one.
Let me get the chat room to work on that. What would be a Gmail support number? The other thing somebody said is tweeting. That sometimes works. I think companies are nuts when they say, you know, they think that Twitter, bad publicity on Twitter is bad for them. But they do seem to take that seriously. So sometimes tweeting them will get enough attention. We'll look for a email address for you. I mean, a phone number for you. Because honestly, I don't have a fix for this. This is the nightmare scenario with Google. And it's probably good you called, so the people are kind of aware of this, to be honest. Yeah, somebody said 1-800-GOOD-LUCK. I'm afraid I can't really help you. Thomas, I just don't know of an answer to this question. That's ridiculous. You can tweet at Gmail. I would. That's probably a good idea. And I'll keep listening. Maybe somebody will come along with a solution. That's just ridiculous. This is, by the way, why people who are listening probably should consider whether they want to use Gmail as their sole one and only email. I pay for a Fastmail account. It's worth it to me. All right, Scott, your turn on the program.
Thank you so very much.
I'll get you a clock here. And
Let's see here. I was chatting with Roger of the North in the chat room.
Roger of the North.
Roger of the North. And he was looking for an inexpensive 75-inch TV. And, of course, you and I often recommend Vizio, and I still do. In fact, the Vizio P-Series Quantum is $1,500 on 75-inch on the website, on Vizio's website. Somebody else in the chat room, Dot Pitch, I believe, just mentioned that he bought one for $1,600. That was the Quantum X, the PX series, and I'm going to look that up right now, which would be a little more expensive. Shop TVs. For some reason, my internet's a little slow. Here it is, P-Series Quantum X, which is their top of the line. And their 75-inch is $2,200. So getting it for $1,600 is pretty darn good, I would say. That's really good. The P75, not the Quantum X, but just the P-Quantum, is $1,400. The other one I would recommend is the TCL 6 Series. Their 75-inch is $1,400 on their website. So, you know, they're all in that same ballpark, the Vizio P Quantum, not PX, but P Quantum, and the TCL 6 Series, which is a Roku TV. If that's important to you, the Vizio is not. It does have its own smart TV interface, but it's their own. I forget what it's called now. Somebody in the chat room can help me with that. The TCL is a Roku TV. I don't know which one has more dimming zones. Maybe somebody in the chat room can help me. Oh, Mike Heiss says the TCL 65 now on sale, so that's good. Roger of the North also asked if he should wait for Super Bowl TV sales. And yeah, I think they're probably will be good deals then on the 2018 models, because the 2019s are going to be coming around. The 2019 models, because the 2020s are going to be coming around the bend, which is fine. I can't, though, as I said in my note to him, I cannot see how they can get that much cheaper. As I mentioned on my on the air segment, the profit margins for retailers are so thin. Just a couple of percent. I mean, how can they go below that much below that without losing money. Well, they can make it up on volume, right? No, they lose money. Yes, thanks, Mike Heiss. TCL 6 Series 65 is definitely something I would consider. If you want a 75, and as I mentioned in my on-air segment, people are buying larger TVs, no doubt about it. And with the increased resolution, that's a good thing. You should be buying larger TVs because 4K really supports a much larger screen size. And 8K, what I didn't get to because of time restrictions on the air, was that at CES we're going to see even bigger TVs, and we're going to see 8K. We're going to see 8K all over the place, even though there's no 8K content. Now, unlike when 4K came out, there was some 4K content, a little bit anyway. Now, with 8K, other than a couple of satellite broadcasts from NHK in Japan, there's going to be no native 8K content. There is some on YouTube, I will say that. But otherwise, I mean, there's no commercial content, and there won't be for years, if ever. I suppose eventually there will be, but ATSC 3.0, another thing I didn't get to talk about because of time restrictions, the broadcast standard that's coming is going to be implemented in up to 40 markets next year. That's not going to have 8K. It's going to have 4K, but it's not going to have 8K. And as Beatmaster points out in the chat room, AI upscaling is the new buzzword. That's exactly right. 8K TVs are going to rely on AI upscaling to take lower resolutions up to 8K. And it's gotten really good. And at CES this year, next year, in a couple of weeks, we're going to see even better AI upscaling, I'm sure, from Samsung, Sony, LG, TCL probably. I don't know for sure. Actually, I do know in a couple cases, but I can't tell you or I'd have to kill you. But I think it's safe to say we're going to see better upscaling, and we're going to see a lot more 8K TVs. And we're going to see ATSC 3.0 tuners built into TVs. Now, what I'm interested in seeing at CES is whether or not we're going to see ATSC 3.0 outboard tuners. Remember when ATSC 1.0, when digital TV first came out, there were a ton of outboard tuners. There were also converters from analog to digital, but there were also outboard tuners to work with TVs that didn't have internal tuners. And I wonder if we're going to see that at CES. I'm really interested in finding out. Chumley, outboard means a separate box, not inside the TV. So you might have a 4K TV or an 8K, 4K, let's say a 4K TV that doesn't have an ATSC 3.0 tuner built into it. Are you going to be able to buy a separate box, what's called an outboard box, that has an ATSC 3.0 tuner that you would then connect to the TV via HDMI? I don't know. I haven't heard a lot about it, a lot of buzz about that in the pre-CES flood of press releases. But I'm going to be on the lookout to see if that does happen, because I do know that some TVs will have them, but others won't yet. So if you buy one of those, how are you going to get ATSC 3.0 when it's deployed in your market, in your city? Buy a little box. I haven't heard of any little boxes.
There will be little boxes, though.
I'm pretty sure there will be, but I'm going to be on the lookout for them to see exactly who's going to be offering them.
Leo Laborde, the tech guy. It's time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and why the Goog is not working so well, it turns out. So we started the show talking about how Google is giving you up, handing over your location information whenever law enforcement says, hey, who was around at that time? Okay. And then, of course, our last call of the hour, Thomas had a Gmail account. He moved. Something went wrong. I suspect there's more at play here than just you moved, because that doesn't make any sense. But it might have been an unfortunate confluence of events that convinced Google that he was fraudulent or that his account had been hacked. And at that point, Google just blocked his access. Now, if you live on your Google account, if Gmail is your only email or your main email, your business email, that's problematic. So there's a few things proactively you can do right now. And anybody who has just a Gmail account really ought to do this. First, do the security checkup and do what Google says, because Google will do a number of things to, in theory, make it easier to recover an account. You'll set up a recovery phone number. It can be a landline. It could be a cell phone, but a phone that you have control of, obviously. You could set up a separate email account that isn't Google's, so that if you lose access to your account, you could say, well, call this phone number or email me at this other account. You know, I've lost my Gmail, but if you email me at the other account, you can send me recovery information. You should also, and this is true of any system, many of these systems offer something called two-factor authentication. I can't get into my Google account without a little physical dongle that I have, a security key. I get mine is a YubiKey from Yubico, Y-U-B-I-C-O.com. But there are many companies that make these. Google even sells their own. And it's a little USB device that I have. If somebody was going to hack my account, they'd have to have this physical device. That makes it a lot harder to hack an account or mess with an account. It also is an additional way to show Google, no, no, it's really me. I have my YubiKey. If you set that up, two-factor, and again, do that not just with Google, but with every single possible, any account that lets you do that. Facebook does, Twitter does, your bank almost certainly does. In some cases, they'll text you a message to your phone. That's not the best way to do it, but it's better than nothing. Set those up. And if they offer you recovery codes, that's another way to do this. And Google does. It is, it's a dozen or so long numbers, and you can print them out. I would recommend printing them out and putting them in a safe place in your house, but you could also save it to some other place. Don't save it to your Gmail for obvious reasons. Save it somewhere where you can get access to it, even if you've lost access to your Google accounts, because that is like one of those YubiKeys. It's another way of proving who you are, and many other services offer this. These recovery codes, those are always good. Print them out. Keep them somewhere safe. These are all important things. Here's the number, by the way, Thomas, that you can call. One of our chat rooms, chatroom fellas has figured it out. Spaccarelli, thank you. I hope this is right. 855-836-3987. By the way, CJ is reminding us, don't set your Google second factor phone number to a Google voice number. Because what you have to do is, and this is the thing that sometimes people find hard to do, is have a disaster mentality. Think about the worst case scenario. In this case, the worst case scenario is I've lost access to Google, to everything Google does. How do I get it back? And if your recovery phone number is another Google service, well, that's no good. That's no good. I think more is at play here. There's a reason Google thinks your account's been compromised, and maybe it has, and you just don't know it. I do want to say this is unusual. Nevertheless, it's prudent to plan for it. I'll give you, if email is important to you, and I think it is to almost everybody, certainly if you use it for business, there are a few other things you should keep in mind. First of all, you shouldn't be reliant on Gmail. It's tempting. It's free. It's a great service. They do a good job, and it's free. Did I mention it's free? Don't be a cheapskate. So the first thing everybody should do is register a domain name that's yours, either your business's name, your family name, something distinctive that's yours. Register that. I have laporte.email. That's one of a number of domains I own. When you send email to laporte.email, that laporte.email address doesn't do anything. It just forwards it on to a mail service. It could be Gmail, by the way. And here's the advantage of that. If you lose your Gmail account, you can then say, oh, I have that custom domain forward somewhere else. You wouldn't be able to access your old mail, but at least you wouldn't lose any new business. So every business should have a custom email domain. It's not expensive, maybe $10 a year. maybe less, maybe more if you want a fancy. I think the .email cost me a little bit more. The fancy domain names, the .coms are usually the cheapest, or .us, that's pretty cheap too. But find one. Go to a domain registrar. I like hover.com. That's the one I use. I don't know if they're still a sponsor. They were a sponsor for a long time, and I still use them, hover.com. You can register the domain name, and you can tell Hover forward, you know, everything that goes to that address, forward it. Now, I pay for an email company, an email service. There are lots of these. I really like and use and recommend, actually, fastmail.com. They're an Australian company. They do a very good job of email handling. They have a web interface that's much like Gmail. They maybe don't have all the features Gmail has, but at least because I pay for it, it's not expensive, maybe 50 to 90 bucks a year, but because I pay for it, if I call them, there's somebody there. When you don't pay for a service, you can't expect great tech support, I'm afraid. That's a cost center, and free services don't generally offer great support. There are ways to back up your Gmail. In fact, Google offers this at Google Takeout, takeout.google.com. So if you're worried, it wouldn't be a bad idea to periodically back up your Gmail. That way, if you lost access to the account, at least you'd have your old email. And if you were prudent enough to create a email redirection address, then you've lost nothing. You redirect it. You could even set up a new Gmail account on, you know, create a new one and have it forward there. I feel terrible for Thomas. I don't, you know, it's, I think there's more at play here. Something else happened that made Google not want you to have access to your Gmail, and you need to figure out what that is. The problem is there's no appeal. And this is something so important to remember. Anytime we live on a service that's free, Facebook's a good example. If you're storing all your pictures on Facebook, Facebook can at the drop of a hat say, yeah, we don't like you. Kill your account. You lost it. Same with Yahoo's Flickr. Actually, it's not Yahoo anymore, but same with a lot of these services. The free services, there's no guarantee, and it's a good idea to have multiple copies of everything on different services in case you lose access to one. And the free services are the ones, you know, that are most troubling because they're not going to have great support. They have no disincentive to hang up on you. I feel bad. So Chumley said he called that number we gave out. It says, welcome to Google. If you can't log in, press 3. So there is a number. Good luck. I don't know what kind of service you're going to get, but 855-836-3987. Thank you, Spaccarelli and Chumley, for that help. You know, it's one of those things where it's good. I'm glad to hear from Thomas, not because I'm glad this happened to him, but it's important for us to hear as a little, little warning, a little holiday warning. Hey, I'd like to talk a little bit about our sponsor. This would be a good time to mention the best browser ever, Brave. Do you use Brave? Oh, man, I love Brave. Brave is, in my opinion, the best browser out there for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's based on the Chromium code base, the same one Google's Chrome is. So it's Chrome compatible. You can use your Chrome plugins. Any site that works with Chrome will work exactly the same with Brave, with one exception. Brave is from a company that respects privacy. So the Brave browser will block ads, will block all that extra JavaScript, will block, you know, all the trackers automatically out of the box. And you can even tune that. In fact, because Brave is free and because you can have multiple browsers, I would get Brave on any device that you use a browser on, your phone, iOS, Android, your PC, Mac, Windows, Linux, and just try it. You don't have to dump your other browser. You don't even have to make it your default. Just try it. I think you'll see. Everything goes faster because you're not downloading all that junk. You're much more secure. You're not being tracked. And you can even turn off social trackers like the Facebook like button and Twitter buttons. And I think that's fantastic. LinkedIn, just block all that stuff. Don't let it track you. It's 6 times faster than the competitors because of all that. That's all you have to do is turn those off. Those things slow you down. It also, on your mobile devices, saves battery. Same reason. and reduces the data usage on your phone. Same reason. Unmatched speed, online privacy, a better user experience. It's absolutely free. And you'll find Brave is very easy to set up. It automatically imports all your settings so you can easily switch browsers. Brave Sync means all your browsers will have the same bookmarks everywhere. I love that feature. I also like it that unlike the Google Chrome Sync, it doesn't sync plugins because I have different plugins I want to use in different places. It doesn't sync those. Now, here's the other thing I like. Yes, it'll use Chrome plugins, but you'll find you're installing a far fewer. You don't need an ad blocker. You don't need a script blocker. You don't need a privacy protection. You don't need a lot of the plugins that you might use. Brave does it already out of the box. Import all your bookmarks with one click. If you feel guilty about blocking ads, Brave even has an answer for that. You don't have to use it. It's completely optional. But basic attention tokens, you can earn these tokens by watching privacy-respecting ads that Brave feeds you. They're just little notifications. You know, you don't have to watch them if you don't want to. They don't impede your browsing. They're completely secure. But you can earn your tokens that way, or you can buy tokens, and then you can automatically allocate tokens to publishers because you're taking away their revenue when you block the ads, but this way you give them back their fair share of web revenue. That's optional. I use it because I think it's a great idea. Join Brave's mission to fix the internet. And by the way, if you want a real private window, Brave has one. You know that the private browsing on almost any browser, including Safari and Google Chrome, still sends back all the information to the home office. It just doesn't save cookies. With Brave, it's truly private. It's even got Tor if you want to be completely anonymous. I love that feature. You can download Brave right now. Go to brave.com/twit and give it a try. I think as soon as you try it, you'll say, why am I using Chrome? Switch to Brave today. brave.com/twit. Yesterday was about big tech. Today's about us. And what we've been talking about today, maybe you want to un-Google yourself. This is a good way to do it. Brave.com/twit. Once you start using it, you'll never go back. Brave.com/twit. We thank him so much for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. And thank you for supporting the Tech Guy podcast. I know you could just go to brave.com or Google Brave and you get it. Please go to brave.com/twit and let them know you saw it here. Thank you. What are you? Are you a hunk, oh hunk, a burning love? Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo the phone number. All right, let's move on to cheerier topics than how Google's screwing up. Line four, Richard in Long Beach. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
Leo, I'm a 86-year-old retired medical doctor trying to get back into medical research, which I did successfully about 50, 60 years ago. Anyway, I'm going to need to upgrade my computer skills, obviously.
Cool.
My question today is I got two phones, two cell phones. One's an ancient 15-year-old flip top, works great. Same original battery, go figure that one. Anyway.
Wow, that's impressive. Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, I heard that the technology supporting flip phones expires December 31st, so they won't work anymore. Is that true or not?
Who's your carrier?
My carrier is, what's the one that's owned by the Mexican billionaire?
Carlos Slim?
Yeah.
Does he own a carrier in the U.S.?
Well, it's, what's the name of that thing? I had it so long I've forgotten already.
All right, anyway, so that would be specific to the carrier. I'm wondering,
it's Straight Talk.
Straight Talk, okay.
Yeah.
And the problem with Straight Talk is it can ride on different carriers depending on which one you bought. So sometimes it's Sprint, sometimes T-Mobile. I'm going to guess, I don't know which technology is going to wear out, so I don't know.
And maybe I should just call them and ask them.
Yeah.
Of course, they're going to try and
yeah.
Slim
owns a company called TrackPhone, which owns Straight Talk, Simple Mobile, Net10, a bunch of...
That's TrackPhone. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's a TrackPhone. I don't know what is not... Maybe the CD... this is specific to them, in other words. So, yeah, call them and say, what can I do with this phone? After December 31st, is it true it's not going to work? It may be that the CDMA technology may be on Sprint and maybe they're turning that off. But I don't know, and I think that this is specific to the carrier, so you got to just ask. They'll know.
Okay.
They'll know.
Okay.
But, you know, if you're going to get into the modern world of high tech, it might be time to upgrade to a – you said you have two phones. Do you have a smartphone?
Yeah, yeah. The other one, I got an old iPhone S, 6S Plus, which I've, to be honest with you, I had a little – some trouble learning how to use it. And I was – my specific question on that is I thought that maybe buying Rich DeMuro's 101 Tips would help.
Absolutely. It's a great book, yeah.
Okay. Now, he's got a new edition for the new iPhones. I'm wondering if that's going to be better than – I was thinking maybe I should – if I can get it from him, get his original edition.
Here's the reason you want the new edition. It's, your iPhone 6S is probably already on iOS 13, the latest version of iOS. If it's not, you'll want to put it on that. And the new book, his newest book, is iOS 13 specific.
Oh, okay.
So that is they've changed dramatically how the operating system works. So because I think you should be on iOS 13 to begin with, it's important.
Okay.
I would update your phone because you always want to have the latest version just for security reasons. And then you'll want the newest book because that's specific to that operating system.
Okay.
And I think it's probably a good idea for you to do this. What if you're going to do medical research, what is there specific software you need or what is it that you're going to do?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'm actually starting to apply.
Nice.
It depends what – there's going to be probably a somewhat lightweight clinical medical research, you know, maybe 1 or 2 days a week.
Oh, neat.
But,
so would it be going into a lab or will you be doing statistical analysis, something like that?
Probably seeing patients, just monitoring patients.
Oh, fantastic.
In the study.
I love that.
Pardon?
I love that. I think that's a wonderful idea. I think you probably will want to get to know that iPhone only because I know, for instance, Apple on the Apple Watch and on the iPhone has a research program called Apple Research that some health agencies are using. There's a couple of different research programs. It's patient records for many medical groups are now being stored on the phone. You may, in the course of your research, they may say we have an app that we want our patients to use. All of that would be helpful for you to feel comfortable with the phone. So I think that that's probably a good idea.
Sounds good.
Yeah. You might even want to look at an Apple Watch. They're about $300 and they tie nicely to the phone. It'll work with your 6S. And there's a lot of interesting stuff on there, including the ability to do a kind of poor man's two lead ECG on the phone, which is kind of wild.
Oh, yeah. I'm aware of that. That's just an article in this week's Journal of the American Medical Association that says, well, not quite ready for prime
time. It's two leads. So, you know, as you know, an ECG is, I think, 12 leads normally if you go to the doc to do it. So it's not going to be as accurate. But what it's being used for is kind of a preliminary warning system, especially for AFib. And so I think there's some value, you know, limited. It's not, you know, it's not diagnostic, obviously, but it's a start. And it's and I think that that's also very interesting. And Apple is really trying to make the Apple Watch and the iPhone be health devices. So I think for what you're interested in, I think it'd probably be a good idea for you to understand it a little bit.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I already am into that because I have AFib. So
there you go.
I'm personally acquainted with that, even if I didn't want to be.
There's a company called AliveCor. I don't know if you're aware of them.
Yeah, I'm very well off. I've read a lot of their stuff. Yeah.
They make it's also a two lead kind of a system. You put your thumbs on it. And it will tie to your smartphone, and it'll give you a preliminary diagnosis if you're feeling a little odd, or you can even – I have friends with AFib who might do it every day just as – and it will send it off to their physician for a reading. And it's $99, which is amazing. But
yeah, I did that. I'm with them. And actually, I've gotten into – now I've had surgery and all that, put in a pacemaker, so I'm beyond that's excellent for what you're talking about.
Yeah,
and to act full blown atrial fib, I'm into a heavier duty technology.
But absolutely, and that's the important
very good
thing
as an initial indicator of what's going
exactly
on with you.
That's the important thing. I really think it's up to Apple and physicians to explain this is not diagnostic by any means. It's just a helpful tool, maybe for a warning system. And this would be very, I think, important for you to understand as well, not only as a patient, but as a physician.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks so much, and I appreciate your help.
Always, always a pleasure. And I think it's great that you're going back to work. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. More calls coming up. Johnny Jett, our travel guru, too. There he is. He's traveling all over. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy. You said you'd booked some more travel, so you're heading out, huh?
Well, days ago, I went to New York City for the night for the TPG Awards, which, you know, the credit card awards, wow. Travel credit card rewards.
What a life.
I stayed at the Conrad New York downtown. They put me up. They put their influencers up. And, you know, they have one of the best showers in New York City.
Really, I hope you Instagrammed it.
I sure did.
Influencers. There's an interesting term.
I'm not a big fan of it, but I'm considered an influencer.
You are an influencer.
I consider myself a publisher because my website, johnnyjett.com, I've been around since 1995. Wow. The word blogging came out probably around 2004.
Yeah, you're way ahead.
A travel blogger.
Yeah,
and then now the term is influencer, which Forbes, by the way, called me the original travel influencer. Which
I think you might be if you started in 95.
Well, I put it on my Instagram because it sells, but I don't really like the word influencer.
So an influencer is obviously someone who influences people's purchase decisions. In your case, I mean, like Kim Kardashian influences, actually it's Kendall Jenner who influences people's lip filler choices.
Yeah.
So you influence people's travel choices, and I think that's pretty clear you do.
Well, I try to inform them and have them make sure they have a better trip. My job is to motivate people to get out and see the world. I used to be afraid to travel.
Oh, I love
to used to be
travel.
Afraid to leave the house.
Yeah.
And I used to have so many fears, and I was afraid to leave the country, afraid to leave the house. And so now I just think that as corny as it sounds, the more people travel, especially internationally, the less prejudices there will be in the world.
Completely agree.
I just try to get people to do it safer, faster, and cheaper.
Yeah.
And
so that everybody can do it. Because I think a lot of people don't travel because it's expensive.
For sure. But there are ways around it. And listen, growing up, we didn't have a lot of money and we didn't travel much. I flew a handful of times. It was only when I went to college where I started traveling a lot. And I dated a girl whose parents lived around the world and she only flew business class or first class. I never knew what it was like on the other side of that curtain, but for sure I wasn't going to sit in the back. So I had to figure out ways to get cheap tickets. And that's what I do. And that's what I specialize in. Actually, I just booked a ticket just now.
I hope that's the name of your next, maybe your biography, On the Other Side of the Curtain. Or maybe you could put that on your gravestone. I'm on the other side of the curtain now.
Well,
bought a ticket to where?
Well, actually, there's really cheap fares right now. You can fly business class Toronto to Singapore via London on an A350 lie-flat seat to Helsinki.
Yeah, that's a nice plane, yeah.
So two stops. So you're flying BA, Finnair, and then you go to Singapore. It's $1,500 one way for business class or $2,500 round trip for business class.
That's unheard of.
That's a really good deal.
Makes me want to go to Singapore. But first, I'd have to go to Toronto.
Yeah, but you know what? And you can also do Hong Kong. And I actually booked a ticket to Hong Kong, and I'm using I have a system-wide upgrades because I fly a lot on American, and they give them. And right now they're wide open because no one wants to go to Hong Kong.
Right.
So I paid $500 for a one-way fare, and I'm flying business class.
Nice.
I mean, that's nice. Great deals.
It's a long flight. You want business class because you'd like to sleep on that flight.
For sure. And so there are some websites you can find where you find these deals. So I sign up to every different travel blogger, newsletter and stuff like this. That deal I just mentioned, I learned about a guy named Lucky. He has 1 mile at a time. This guy travels like nobody else. He's just out of his mind. I wouldn't want to travel that much, but he finds really good deals. So I sign up to his newsletter. I also use theflightdeal.com. Which actually I just looked in their newsletter. It actually comes right before I go on air every day. And they have one right now for American Airlines or Japan Airlines to Singapore for $557 round trip, including taxes. This is economy class. But that's an incredible deal. I mean, in the old days, you could never fly to Asia for that low.
The key to this, though, is you have to be flexible in your flight plans, your travel plans, right? You have to be willing to go in the window.
Exactly.
Maybe you didn't think you were going to Hong Kong next month, but now you are, that kind of thing.
True. And, you know, days of the week, although that Hong Kong, that Singapore deal I just found, it's pretty wide open.
Wow.
For pretty much any date, maybe not in the summertime, mm-hmm. which you don't really want to go there in the summertime anyway.
Well, but, you know, it's the same all year round. It's equatorial.
But that's a key to finding cheap deals is being flexible. So I always tell people, you know, you want to go when other people aren't going because that's when you're going to get the cheapest fares and the best experiences. You're not going to fight for a pool chair or a beach space or a cabana. You know, on that flight deal, by the way, United has a deal, L.A. to Bangkok, $494 round trip. I mean, that's a long flight for $494 is an incredible deal. So you just always search around, sign up to every different newsletter, you know, all the different travel bloggers, travel brands, but usually the brands aren't going to tell you they're really good deals. You really got to follow influencers, as we would say.
Oh, you see, there is a reason for you guys.
Yeah.
You exist reason. Influence me to an app or a website, will you?
Okay, so I got another one for you. So another great website, actually, this is probably the best one to find deals, although I love people to sign up to my newsletter. I can't compete with this guy, scottscheapflights.com.
Now, this guy's not a travel agent, right? He's not making...
No, he's not a travel agent, not at all. So he sends these newsletters out. He has a free version, but you really want the premium version, which is $49 a year.
So that's how he makes his money.
At first, I didn't think it was worth it, but they gave me a free subscription, by the way, and he has incredible deals. He just had one yesterday to Paris for $280 round trip from LA, from New York.
Go have dinner in Paris and come back.
I mean, the deals are really good. It's well worth the $49 a year. And he, at the bottom of the newsletters that he send out, he has a link to Google Flights or Skyscanner, usually Google Flights. And Google Flights is where I spend a lot of time because...
No more Kayak or Orbitz. You go to Google Flights.
Yeah. I mean, you can still use those guys. And you always price everything out because Google Flights is not always the cheapest. It's just the easiest to use. And you can really sort it. So you can do, you know, if you want to fly first class, business class, premium economy... the one thing I don't like about Google Flights, by the way, is that, you know, when they say economy, a lot of times it's showing up as basic economy. So when you go click the link, let's say to American Airlines deal, it takes you directly to their website, airline's website. But it says, would you like to, you know, fly the basic economy or fly regular economy? And you always want to fly regular economy if you care about miles and points or if you care about which seat you're in, because basic economy doesn't include, you can't pick your seat until you check in 24 hours before.
Flights.google.com. They bought ITA, which is a big airline scheduling reservation company. So they actually have kind of a, like, it's like the old Sabre. They have everything is in there.
They have it all. But the way you can sort by which hubs you want to go through, which airlines, which alliance you want to do. So I fly One World mostly because I'm American Airlines. I've been flying American lately. So it's just a great way to earn miles and also find the cheap deals. And you can exclude airlines. So if you don't want to fly airlines that you know that are going to charge you a lot for baggage or carry-ons, things like that, you can take them out of the picture.
If you have a peanut allergy, you might want to exclude Emirates. Did you read the article in Sunday's New York Times?
No, I did not.
A poor woman with a peanut allergy was basically treated like a criminal, pulled off the plane, missed her flight, interrogated in a room. Why didn't you tell us about this? But I filled out all the medical forms. Well, you know, yeah. And apparently, Emirates' policies when it comes to people with food allergies is not great. So.
Yeah, that happened late. That happened recently too. Another one.
Yeah. Sunday's Times in the travel section.
I just wrote it down to check it out.
Worth reading, and not a good story. It makes me. I think I'll check that one off.
My son has a peanut allergy.
Yeah,
he's a nut allergy.
Yeah. Eric Dragonheart says that Google Flight has major pricing issues. Like some prices are not super accurate. I think you want to use more than one, right? Is that the key?
Well, you know, I haven't seen that. I mean, I think he might be talking about when, again, like it brings up the basic fares. I mean, once in a while, say your price is repriced, but... they're not always the cheapest. Usually Priceline will actually get you a cheaper deal. But you go to Google Flights to find out what has it, and you start your search there, you search around, and then you go to the other sites. And also getting package deals is the way to go to get an even cheaper deal.
Right. You know, we're going on a trip in June, and it's through a tour packager. I won't say the name. And they have their own flight specialist. But the flight he proposed is not a great flight. We have to stop in Detroit or something.
I think Delta?
I can't remember, but we're going to Budapest. So I'm just going to do it myself because I think I can get at least as good a price, and I don't have to do that. I can go on Lufthansa through Munich.
Well, LOT, a lot. The Polish airline now flies nonstop.
I'm not
nonstop.
Flying a Polish airline.
No, lots of good airlines. And United's their partner, so you'll get.
All right, I'm prejudiced. I know. I admit it. I'm prejudiced.
There are plenty of carriers that I won't fly. They're mostly a lot of the low cost Asian carriers. I wouldn't fly Thai Airways anymore. I used to fly them, Lion Air, things like that.
Lion Air, I'm not flying. Yeah,
no.
I guess I shouldn't be so prejudiced. And ones run by the government are probably fine, right?
But Budapest is starting to be one of the hot spots again. So a lot of airlines, they pulled out. A lot of them pulled out the nonstops, but now they're bringing them back in. I think American just started a nonstop too, I believe from Philly. But there's nothing from the West Coast.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right. I like that. I could tell we're getting down. Getting funky. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. David in Anaheim, California. Hello, David.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks. Leo, what I'd like to do is stream music to three or four rooms in my house. I'm thinking about using an Amazon Echo Dot or some combination of dots and wireless speakers to do that. I do have a Prime membership. I use a Samsung Note 8 phone and a Windows PC for work and entertainment. And my wife uses an iPhone and an iPad. So ideally, I'd like to be able to play music or ask the A-word questions without interfering with what my wife might be doing. But wanted to kind of pick your brain.
Totally doable. In the old days, I would only recommend Sonos because the trick with this is called multi-room music. The hardest thing with multi-room music is playing the same music throughout the house. Sonos calls
that.
If you don't care about that, then this is easy. And actually, Echo Now, I think, does it pretty well. Sonos had a proprietary network formula that handled the biggest problem with multi-room music, which is that they would be slightly out of sync. And that's the worst possible scenario. You're playing one song and it sounds like it's echoing throughout the house. Sonos is magical in that regard. In party mode, you can play the same music throughout the house and it just sounds like the whole house is full of music without any weirdness or latency or echoing. This is something, though, that these newer devices have added. And it's a great capability. You may not want to do it now, but someday you might have a holiday party and want to have, James Brown going throughout the house, and in that case, that's a nice thing to have. But yeah, what you want to do, absolutely fine with Echo. You get a dot in each room, attach them to a speaker, or you can get one of the. There are Echoes that have pretty good speakers. I don't, for instance, the Echo Show in my kitchen is fine. I don't need a better speaker than that. So,
what about the Echo Dots?
Dots don't have great speakers. They're better than they used to be, but they're small. Speaker size is directly correlated with speaker quality. And so the bigger Echo, the cylinder now, they've gotten better sound, better speakers than they used to. The Dot is the worst, better than it used to be, but still the worst sound. Fine for spoken word. It's like an AM radio. So not terrible. Not like the little transistor you used to have as a teenager. Like a bigger AM radio, but a small speaker, it's not going to have a lot of bass. It's going to be a little tinny. You're right. If you hook those up to an external speaker, those are going to sound great.
Okay. So would I put like an Echo Show in, say, the kitchen and then...
I love the Echo Show in a kitchen because it's got a screen. You can attach it, for instance, to your doorbell and see who's at the front door. It's just nice to have that screen. And the speaker in the show is very good.
So then do I put wireless speakers in the other rooms or dots or...
If you want different music in each room, you can use one Echo. You can say, Echo, play, you know, Jingle Bells in the living room, and it will. It's smart enough to do that. But those speakers in the living room will have to be connected somehow to an Echo. They have...
Can it be wireless?
Yeah, absolutely. It's all on your Wi-Fi network, so... Okay. Yeah, they have Echoes that are specifically designed for smart speakers. It's brand new. They're less expensive. Actually, the one thing they have is the Echo Flex, which is $20. It plugs into the wall, and it's a mini speaker. That's the smallest speaker they make. They've really branched out. The Dot is a great choice. The Echo Studio is very good sound. That's $200, though. Now you're starting to get more expensive. So that you should look at the variety of Echo devices. And you can really slowly increase your – I wouldn't recommend buying it all at once. You know, slowly increase it as you understand it and make sure you like it. You like the choices it offers and so forth. But I absolutely – you know, I spent thousands of dollars because Sonos is very expensive to put Sonos in every room. And honestly now, I could easily have done it for a lot less using Echoes.
So conceptually, it would be a show or, you know, a Dot in the kitchen – and then Dots or, again, shows in each of the room or wireless speakers. I'm still unclear on that because if my wife's in the kitchen playing her music or doing a cooking timer and I'm in the office doing whatever, I won't be able to play different songs or ask different
questions.
Yeah,
so you tell when you do this, you tell the Echo where you want it to play. Each location, though, is defined as location by the presence of an Echo device. What you would have, for instance, you'd have an Echo show in the kitchen that you talk to. It's kitchen timers. You can watch, you know, Jimmy Fallon's monologue on it or whatever, cartoon. It's nice. I really like the Echo show. Then in the living room where you have a nice stereo setup, you'd get the Echo input. That right now is on sale for $10. The input has no speaker at all. It connects to your stereo, but it becomes now an Echo that's listening to your speech in the living room, but also can be communicating with the Echo show in the kitchen. So you could say in the kitchen, hey, play some, you know, nice dinner music in the living room, and it will play in the living room. You command it remotely, in other words.
Okay.
So I would say look at Echo inputs anywhere you already have a good speaker system or you want to put better speakers. If you want to just get an Echo that has a good speaker, they also sell those at $200. They sell a you know fancy Echo that has it's called the Echo Studio that has high fidelity. The Echo Dots are fine for just voice or you know the kids. They even have a kids edition. I think the input is good if you already have speakers. And then there's also this kind of weirdo thing. This is the Echo Flex, which is a plug that you plug into the plug wall, and then it adds a voice capability. So if you've wired up speakers in the living room, you have the Echo Flex in the bathroom, you could say, I'd like my theme music to play when I come out, and it'll play in the living room.
Any security issues? Do you?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I haven't talked about this, but this week there was a news story about the Amazon sells a camera as well called the Ring camera. And there's a news story about a podcast that was looking in on people's Ring cameras. If you have one of these devices, it's on the internet. So what you now the good news is you can secure these. You're buying it for Amazon. Amazon keeps the you know if there's security flaws, they'll update it over the air, stuff like that. But you definitely want to set strong passwords. You want to all of these devices become gateways into your network. And if you have cameras on them, as the Echo Show does, you absolutely want to make sure you have strong passwords. The reason that this podcast was able to crack these Ring cameras is they'd use the default. They hadn't changed the password. They used the default password.
Oh, gotcha.
Or an easy-to-guess password. So Ring and Nest and most of the better companies, Nest is a Google product, will allow you also to use two-factor authentication. Strongly recommend that. And only buy these devices from companies that are reputable, you know the name, and they're going to keep it up to date. If there's a security flaw, they'll push down a fix. And that's absolutely the case with Amazon and Google.
Okay, and the last question, do you keep them on your wireless network or do you try and segment that out? Or
It's a very complicated thing to do. If you happen to have two networks in your house, you could do that. Otherwise, you have to do something called a VLAN, which requires specialized hardware. I recommend the Edge Router X from Ubiquiti, $50 device. It'll let you set up a VLAN. I hope you're a networking expert. In other words, don't worry about it. I don't even do it. I have all the capabilities. I have the Edge Router X. I have two networks in my house. I have Comcast Business and Consumer, and I still don't do it. Just lock it down. Okay. Use good devices from good reputable companies that patch it regularly. Make sure you use strong passwords, two-factor when available. Nobody's going to hack into your system.
Yeah. Thanks, Leo. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Yeah. And I'll talk a little bit about this Ring thing, because there was a lot of scare over this. I don't think it's as risky sounding, but there, you know, there are, it's a reasonable warning. The Tech Guy Podcast this week brought to you by DO, Digital Ocean. Love the Digital Ocean, the simplest, most developer-friendly cloud platform that's optimized to make managing and scaling apps easy. Intuitive API, multiple storage options, integrated firewalls, load balancers, and more. I use DO because I am learning web technologies, so it's very easy for me to create a server, spin it up, spin it down. The cost is right, and if you perhaps invent the great new next big thing and you create a minimum viable product on DigitalOcean, and then suddenly you say, we got to scale, they scale with you. You can add CPUs, you can add storage, you choose the server you want, whether you're running one virtual machine or 10,000, it is easy to launch in the cloud and scale as you grow. DigitalOcean is trusted by a million developers. I'll show you how easy it is to create a new virtual machine. So this is my setup. I think the last time I used this, I was installing Mastodon. But let's make a new one. What do you say? We're going to create a droplet. Notice, though, it supports Kubernetes clusters using Docker. It supports databases, volumes. You can route your existing domains. You can create a cloud firewall, load balancing, all sorts of stuff. Let's just make it simple, because I'm a simple guy, and create a droplet. Now, when you create a droplet, you can choose your plan, standard, general purpose, CPU optimized, memory optimized. The nice thing is it's easy to switch. So if you don't know what that means, just pick the standard or the starter plan. Do you want Ubuntu or FreeBSD? Or maybe you like Fedora, Debian, or CentOS. Maybe you'd prefer to work with CoreOS, Fedora, Atomic, or Rancher, and Docker, and Kubernetes. Or,
I love this part,
go to the marketplace where you can pick one-click installs for a million different kinds of things. Well, not a million, but quite a few. Let's say, you know, I like our Discourse server. If I wanted to run my own Discourse, which is our forum, well, I could do that. Discourse, we're going to install it, and then I'll choose the plan. I am a cheapskate, so while you can choose from a huge variety of plans, depending on the horsepower you need, I'm going to choose the $5 a month because, you know, I'm a developer. I want to try it. I can add block storage. I always choose San Francisco, but look at, you've got data centers in New York, San Francisco, Amsterdam, Singapore, London, Frankfurt, Toronto, Bangalore, all over the world. Private networking, an option, although without that, you're going to get a public IP address, which is lovely, IPv6 if you want. I always use SSH keys to log in. I recommend that. By the way, that's going to give you root access to this server. And I'll choose one droplet, although you can create many, and I'm just going to call this my Discourse beta server. So there's the name. I can tag it if I want. I can add it to a project. And for an additional dollar per month per droplet, I can enable system-level backups once a week. Trust me, you always want to turn that on. Now, let me create the droplet. And while I'm creating the droplet, I'm just going to talk about how hard this is to do if you were to go to a normal server company and say, you know, I'd like to spin up a server. Can you get that provision for me? And they say, yeah, we'll be back to you in a couple of days to a week. And then you've got to install Discourse or Mastodon or WordPress or Node.js or whatever you want to work on yourself. And maybe the management tools are good, maybe they're not. This is the way to do it. It's so much easier. DigitalOcean offers simple, predictable pricing. You'll always know what you pay per month with a flat, industry-leading price structure. And what do you get? You get it all. 24/7/365 world-class support. You get monitoring and alerts. An SLA, four nines uptime, 99.99% uptime. You can create team accounts. You get full DNS management. And as I pointed out, 12 global data centers. And there are over 100 pre-configured one-click applications, including CloudBees, Docker, GitLab, Node.js. Yeah, you can run your own GitLab. Oh, did I mention? We're done. There's my Discourse public IP address right there. It's provisioned. I haven't even finished the ad. It's provisioned. I can access the console right now to prove it to you. This is amazing. DigitalOcean is on a mission to simplify cloud computing so developers and their teams can spend more time building software that changes the world. And if you're learning, this is a great tool for somebody learning how to write Node or, you know, React Native or whatever it is you're working. I'm using this for my PWAs. I'm learning PWAs. If you wanted to write your own blog, whatever you want to do, it's amazing. In fact, we've got an amazing deal. If you go to do.co/twit right now, you can sign up to receive a free $50 credit. Yeah, run your own Minecraft server. Why not, right? do.co/twit, a free $50 credit. So many people use DigitalOcean that there are over 2,000 open source tutorials. So if you want to run a Minecraft server on DigitalOcean, just Google DigitalOcean Minecraft server, and there's somebody who's written a great tutorial to walk you, probably more than one, walk you through it step by step. It is awesome. Don't run your own server out of your own house. That's problematic. Don't pay a lot of money for a dedicated server on some system that's going to take you days to set up. Go to do.co/twit, get a free $50 credit, and get going with DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean, designed for developers, built for businesses. As you can tell, I am a fan. I'm ready to log into my new Discourse server. I love that. How easy was that, huh? Ah, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. 8888 Ask Leo. If you want to join us, 888-827-5536. Ask a question, make a suggestion. If you can help previous callers, we always welcome that too. 888-827-5536. There is a great website, if I do say so myself, where we put everything from the show online. It's techguylabs.com. It's free, no sign up. And we think it's a great way to keep track of everything on the show, to watch shows after the fact if you miss a show, because we put audio and video up there too. Techguylabs.com, and it's absolutely free. We invite you to check it out. You don't have to write anything down. I've been just looking at pricing on the Amazon Echo devices. This is a great time of year. Amazon pretty much sells them at cost from Black Friday through the end of the year because they make money on them. You know, I mean, you order stuff through Amazon. It's just a, you know, it's a valuable data asset for Amazon, getting a microphone and camera in your house, which is why I think a lot of people don't buy these devices. You know, that's up to you. I have Echoes, I have Googles, I have Siris, I have them all in my house. They're listening. They're all listening. And, you know, honestly, any TV you buy these days is probably listening. Many of the devices these days, cameras, listening. You probably saw all the news about the Ring cameras. There was the case of a hacker getting into a Ring camera of that was placed in the bedroom of an 8-year-old girl and pretending to be Santa. That is just messed up. That's just messed up. A bit of a sense of humor, but creepy as heck, right? The mom had installed the camera so she could watch over him while she works overnight. She's got a nurse, so she gets overnight shifts. 4 days after she installed it, she was out on an errand. Her husband was home with the kids. Daughter Alyssa heard noises coming from her bedroom. The 8-year-old went into the bedroom. And somebody was playing Tiptoe Through the Tulips. Tiny Tim. That's scary enough. Alyssa says, "Who's that?" "I'm your best friend. I'm Santa Claus," says the hacker. And in fact, it did get a little creepy. I guess having success, it told the girl to destroy her room. So, this is Ring's response. We've investigated this incident and can confirm it is in no way related to a breach or compromise of Ring's security. Ring says users often use, and this is where Alyssa's mom went wrong, and you should be very careful about this, the same username and password for various accounts and subscriptions. So you sign up for Facebook with the same password or a related password that you sign up to your Ring doorbell and your Ring camera, and you use that password on other sites. Maybe you used it on Target, and Target got breached, right? Some of these sites have been breached. Turns out that password works in a variety of ways, and that's what hackers do. They go around and try things. It's easy to figure out if there is a camera, an internet-connected camera, in a house because there's a signature, a distinct signature. So hackers will go to a site called Shodan and search for those devices, and then they'll get the login, just as you get the login when you want to look at your camera. When mom's on her nursing shift at work, she can log in and see. That's the whole point of it, right? It's an internet-connected camera. Well, the bad guys can get to that login page. Anybody can. But then they have to know the login and the password. If you reuse your passwords, and apparently that's what happened, that's a problem because they can get in. Now they can be Santa Claus or worse. So, a couple of things you absolutely need to do. First of all, stop reusing passwords. I know everybody does it. I don't, but everybody does it. This is a strong argument for a password manager. It's a program that will generate really random, long passwords you'd never in a million years remember, but you don't have to. The password manager keeps track of it. There are a number of great password managers. One of the best is our sponsor, LastPass, but I'll say there's also 1Password. There's Dashlane. There's one I think is really good. It doesn't have as many features. It's very simple, but it's inexpensive, called Bitwarden. It's open source. There's KeePass. That's also open source. So there are lots of choices. Doesn't matter. Any password manager is better than none. And what a good password manager will do, LastPass does this, is it'll do a security audit. It'll go out and check all your passwords and say, and Google's Chrome now does this too, by the way. Oh, that one's been seen. You could do that yourself by going to a website called Have I Been Pwned? HAVEIBENPWNED.com. Pwned is what the hacker kiddies call owned or hacked. HaveIBeenPwned.com. And at the top there, you'll see there's a link to passwords. You can actually enter your password, that one you've used 100 times. You can enter it in there, and it'll say, yeah, we've seen that password. It was revealed in this breach, that breach, this other breach. By the way, it's a safe thing to do. The technology they use does not reveal your password to that website or anybody else. There are 500 million pwned passwords. That is, passwords that have been revealed in security breaches through the years. If one of them is yours, then you're at risk. Now, there's still, even if it's been pwned, there's another way you can fully secure yourself. The Ring cameras and most other good Internet of Things devices also allow two-factor authentication. Turn that on. That means if Alyssa's mom had, even if she'd used a bad password, monkey123, one easily guessed, the hacker would then be asked, okay, we're going to send you a text message or go to your authenticator and tell us what the 6-digit code is. And the hacker would say, oh, I guess I won't be using this one to pretend to be Santa Claus because he doesn't have it. So it's kind of like a second password. And it's a password that comes through your phone. So unless the bad guy has your phone or your phone number, he's not going to get in. And in order to get your phone number, he'd have to target you. And so targeted attacks are much rarer. Most of the time, these attacks are kind of general attacks. And that's absolutely what happened in this case. The bad guy used Shodan to find a bunch of Ring cameras, then went to the cameras, tried known logins. Maybe he attached that IP address to your name, figured that out, used a login you'd used before, and oh, look, I'm in. So I'm going to reiterate, this is the bottom line. If you're out buying IoT devices for the holidays, if you're giving them to people, if you're getting in, IoT is anything connected to the internet in your house. Anything, your router, your doorbell, your microwave oven, your cameras especially, any your Echoes, your Google Nests, your Google Homes, anything connected to the internet in your house, A, get it from a reputable company, not some cheap no-name company you found on Amazon. Get it from a company you know their name. It's Microsoft or it's Google or it's Amazon or it's Apple. It's somebody, you know, good. Big company that does regular security fixes and will push them out to your device so that your device is always kept secure by the company that made it. That's really important. You get a no-name device from some company in Shenzhen, China. They don't care. They don't fix it. Don't buy those. Okay, get it from a good brand name that is going to keep it up to date, and all the big brand names will. Secondly, don't use the default password. Create a new password that's long and strong. Use a password manager to do it. If you don't want to use a password manager, get a book, a notebook that you keep in your desk drawer, then make up a crazy password, write it down. Don't reuse it ever again. That's only for that device. That's the only place you use it, never anywhere else. I know it's much more convenient to use your, you know, maiden name and your birth date and your dog's middle name and all that. And the problem is you keep using that, you're going to get hacked. You're going to. And if the device offers two-factor, and a good device will. So, for instance, on your Ring stuff, the account that you use to log in from your phone to Ring, it should ask you the first time you use it, okay, now I'm going to send you a text message to verify, or you need to use an authenticator program, Google Authenticator, to verify. That's good. You want to turn that on. I know it's a pain, but it's only the first time you use it on that device. That really slows down hackers. You got to do all of that. And if you're putting in a camera with a microphone and a speaker, well, Alyssa's mom's example is a very good example. But the point is, you know, you're going to see this in the local news like crazy. It's all over the place. The networks are showing this story. It's everywhere. But you know better. You know, you can go, you know now, you've listened to this, just go a little deeper. It's not that these devices are insecure. It's that the users aren't using them right. I know. I don't blame them. I don't expect everybody to be a security guru. That's ridiculous. Can't expect that. But if you're going to put one of those devices in your house, especially a camera with a microphone and speaker, sorry, you have to. Long, strong password. Get it from a good company. Use two-factor. And then you won't have any surprise visits from Santa. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, we're going to go back to the phones in just a second. Happy Hot Chocolate Day. Go out and have a hot cocoa for me, will you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888, ask Leo, the phone number. Ronnie in Temecula's next. Hey, Ronnie. Thanks for hanging on.
Hello.
Well, Leo talked and talked and talked. You're very patient.
All right. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure. Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
So I was looking to buy the Bose C700 noise-canceling headphones.
Yes.
But they are a little expensive. So
yes. Yes, they are.
Yeah. There was another brand that had them, like the same quality.
Yeah, there are actually a lot of choices now in noise-canceling headphones. Bose has, you know, kind of invented this. So, yeah. They're $350 because it's a Bose. They're also very pretty. So, is it the prettiness you care about or the noise cancellation?
Noise cancellation.
Yeah. So let me explain, because I think people misunderstand what that is. So I want to explain what it is, and then I'll tell you some other brands that are very good. The way noise, this is called active noise cancellation. And the way it works, this is how Apple's AirPod Pro works and a bunch of other devices work, is they have microphones on the headphones, and they listen to the ambient noise, and they use that incoming ambient noise to cancel it out. They actually flip the waveform so it cancels it out. This works great with any continuous noise, and these are most widely used by business travelers on airplanes because it really reduces the rumble of the jet. But what it doesn't eliminate is intermittent ambient noise, something like the flight attendant asking you if you want a pillow or the baby in the seat behind you crying. Those things will pretty much come through loud and clear. The reason these are nice is because it's much more relaxing when you're on a jet if you don't hear the from the engines. I'm looking at the Wirecutter, which I totally trust on this, and they say that the Bose 700s are the best, but the best at a price. I actually don't use active noise-canceling headphones because I don't want to hear the baby behind me. So when I fly, I use in-ear monitors that seal my ear. My favorite, and these are a lot less expensive, come from a company called Etymotic, E-T-Y-M-O-T-I-C. They have little flanges, and they're fairly long, so they go kind of in your ear and seal it. And that means you don't hear anything. You don't hear engine noise. You don't hear babies. You don't hear anything. And if you've got music, even at a relatively low level playing, all you're going to hear is the music. It's a wonderful experience. I will not get on an airplane without them. But if what you're looking for is active noise canceling, that's the best is absolutely Bose. They invented it. But there are other companies. Anchor makes one under $100, a little bit closer to your price point, I'd bet. The Anchor Soundcore Life Q20. Those sound good. Actually, they're $40 from Amazon. They're quite good. I think Audio Technica makes a pair of noise canceling headphones. They used to anyway, and I had theirs for a long time and liked them quite a bit. Of course, Apple's own Beats also makes them. But honestly, I think that the best for that active noise cancellation is those Bose 700s. But don't misunderstand what they do. They don't block out all noise. And so if that's what you're looking for, I would say take a look at the Etymotics instead, or anything that seals your ears off a little bit.
Yeah, I'm looking for one that does music, phone calls, all that.
Yeah. So Etymotic does sell headset. You know, they have a microphone. Just, you know, they're wired headsets, basically. And they seal the ear. You can make phone calls. The microphone's decent. It's the one that's kind of down by your lapel. They have a various price points, and the more expensive ones are the more accurate. They have audiophile headphones as well. I mean, they make very, very high quality audiophile ones. So, you know, they have varying price points. I wear the HF3, which is inexpensive. It's about $100. That has a microphone, works with the iPhone or Android devices if they have a headphone jack. Otherwise, you'll need an adapter. And I think those work quite well. And they cancel enough audio that I think that there is good. That's what I wear in an airplane flight. If you want a more audiophile, high quality version, they have the ER3s, which are about $180. Still a lot less than the Bose. Almost half what the Bose cost. And they will seal your ears quite well. I guess you can go to the ER4. Those are even more expensive. Those are $300. So you can, it just depends on how audiophile you want. But those audiophile ones do not have microphones. So I think, you know, as long as you understand what you're getting, the Bose are great or the Anchors, but don't expect them to cut out all sound. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Gizwiz, Dick DiBartolo coming up. But first, let's go to Thunder Bay. I always love that name. Up in Ontario, Canada, Jeff's on the line. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I am great. How are you?
Hey, you're doing fine. Thanks for taking my call.
Of course. I appreciate your hanging on. What can I do for you?
No problem. I've got a Surface Pro, about 4 years old. It's 128 gig.
I think that's the original Surface Pro, isn't it?
Might be the second one.
Second one, okay.
Yeah. And the new Windows update has come in, but it's taking up like close to 80 gigabytes.
Yeah.
And so I'm just wondering, is there any way that I can replace that hard drive, change that hard drive?
Because if you only have 128 and you have 80 gigs full of stuff because of Windows 10, oy. Well, for one thing, you can clean up Windows 10. I don't think you can put a new hard drive in that Surface Pro. I don't think it's not like a PC where you could open up the case and put another thing in the slot.
Yeah.
You might be, you know what, I'm going to have to, I've never actually inquired. If you go to somewhere like Crucial.com, places that sell aftermarket RAM, Crucial might not sell storage. Who would sell solid state storage? I would, almost all those sites will have, I don't think you can upgrade the solid state storage, I'm going to bet. But almost all those sites will have a list of devices that it'll work with. So go to Crucial or somewhere like that and just see if they have it for the Surface Pro 2. My guess is it's going to be much like the Apple and other Ultrabooks, where instead of sticking a SSD in there, it's just not a lot of space in that. It's a tablet. They probably have it either soldered in, but maybe they use an M.2 drive. I'm not sure. So actually, we're going to give you a link because the chat room's found one on ifixit.com.
Okay.
A guide to SSD replacement. I want you to watch the video before you do it.
Okay.
And you may say, this is not worth it because these thin devices, these tablet-like devices, are so cramped that they really glue stuff in.
You know, it's such a nice machine, and it's
gorgeous.
Works so well.
That's why it's so nice. Yeah. Now don't you have a micro SD card slot on that thing?
I do. Yes.
Yeah. So you could move stuff there. That's not nearly as fast as the internal drive. You might also look at removing. I think when Windows updates, it keeps copies of the old system around. It keeps some hot fixes around that you don't need. And I think you can remove a lot of that. So if you Microsoft has some tech notes, we'll put links in the show notes to that. But I think there's a lot of stuff you can remove from old Windows 10 upgrades that you no longer need. So that might be the easiest thing to do, just get rid of all that stuff. It's there so that, remember, initially when you do the upgrade, you can roll back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be a whole operating system by itself. That you can get rid of once you say, no, I want to stick with what I've got. And there are also hotfix files. You don't want to delete all of them, but some of them you can delete. There's probably a cache. Look for a folder called Windows Old. If you have that, you can, as long as you're happy with your new upgrade, you can delete that. I think there's a lot of clutter that you can delete, but admittedly, 128 gigs is not a lot, so I understand your desire to upgrade. iFixit.com, they have a guide. They sell the tools. I'm going to guess you'll need some of their specialized tools. They sell a thing called a spudger that is basically a wedge. It's made out of plastic, so it won't mar the finish, but you need to jam it in between the surface of the machine and the top of the, and pry it. Believe me, when you watch the video, if you look at it and you say, oh, I could do that, then do it. But watch it before you even think about it. You can also run a disk cleanup. And if you do run disk cleanup, check the system files box. That'll get rid of a lot of stuff. I bet you can get a lot of that drive back.
Okay. Yeah, it's a nice machine that I like taking places because it's
beautiful.
Small and compact.
It's elegant. Really. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're very, very elegant. I think I personally like a harder keyboard. You know, I don't, those detachable keyboards just don't give me enough solidity. But boy, is it portable, and that's the advantage of it.
That's right.
They've done quite well with their Surface laptops and tablets. They've done very, very well. So, Windows key, type cleanup. Check the box that says system files. That's going to give you 40 or 50 gig back, I bet you.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Take a look. And
I'll give that a try.
Yeah. Then there are other ways to do it, too. We're going to put those in the show notes. The chat room's coming up with a lot of solutions. Something called Storage Sense. I'm not familiar with that. So there are definitely ways to get rid of stuff. You just have to know what you're doing a little bit and be a little bit cautious.
Okay.
Because you don't want to delete something you need. All right.
Sounds good.
Have a great day. Yeah, and iFixit is really great. They're big proponents of the right to repair movement. They're encouraging states across the country to pass laws that allow you to repair your stuff. A lot of companies like Apple, tractor companies like John Deere don't want you to do that. Apple's kind of backed down, I think, because of iFixit and their right to repair. Their righttorepair.org site, but also iFixit, they sell tools, they sell parts. And most importantly, they want to be the manual for your devices. So they have videos and instructional information on all kinds of repairs, from everything to from a Surface Pro to a McDonald's Happy Meal toy. That's really a great company. Oh, I should mention that they have been in the past a sponsor. I think they might still be a sponsor of some of our shows. Rick in Victorville, California is next. Rick, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, how are you doing?
I'm well. Oh, Storage Sense replaced disk cleanup in Windows 10. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, this call is much better than the last one. I put it on the phone. I got all my contacts on my email account.
Oh, gosh. Did you get them back?
No, we never. Outlook had no. It lost by transferring from the phone. There's no way to get it back.
Oh, man, I'm so sorry.
Anyway, I was helping my son yesterday. He's going to start nursing school next month.
Crap, that's great.
I just found out that he would like me to buy him a laptop.
Of course he would. Of course he would.
I knew a guy, so I'm calling that guy.
What is he looking for? Does he want light? Does he want better battery life? Does he want Windows? Does he want Mac? What is he looking for?
All right, this is what he told me. He wants a 15 and a half. He prefers Pentium processors just because he's always had one.
Okay.
He wants Windows 10.
Okay.
He does not want a touch screen. He wants a full keyboard with the, 10 digits on the right.
Yep.
There. Long battery life, obviously.
Yep.
Something lightweight.
I'll give you a couple of answers to this.
Okay.
The one weird factor is no touch screen, because almost all Windows 10 laptops have them. If he really is serious about no touch screen and a big keyboard with a keypad and all that, Lenovo, I would look at a Lenovo ThinkPad, and there are a number of them. There's the X series, there's the T series. They're really, really good, and you can get non-touch screens from Lenovo.
Okay, and how's the memory and
you configure it, so you get to choose.
Okay.
So I would recommend a minimum of 8 gigs of RAM. The other one to look at is the Dell XPS 15. Very nice. That's a touchscreen, though. And Microsoft also makes a 15-inch Surface Laptop 3 I love. But you'll have to get the business edition for the Intel processor, and they also have a touchscreen. So if he's adamant about no touchscreen, and honestly, these are great anyway. Lenovo ThinkPad's definitely the way to go. I'm a big fan. These are going to be, in fact, I have one right in front of me right now. These are going to be rock solid. They're not pretty. They look, they're built like tanks, and they're not necessarily heavy, but they're built solid. And so they don't look, the XPS 15 and the Surface Laptop 3 are gorgeous, thin, beautiful colors and stuff. The Lenovo comes in silver or black, but it is a truck. And I think they have the best keyboards. They're the only ones that will offer no touch screens. If he needs, so what happens when you go to the ThinkPad section at Lenovo is it's a little overwhelming because they have all these different models. So, but you can configure whatever you want. So you can have as much hard drive as you need. If you're looking for the best battery, I think I would probably look at a ThinkPad T 480 or a 480S. I think they still sell the 480s. But those are 14-inch. Well, the 14's pretty close to 15. These are really tough, good battery life laptops. And you can configure it then with as much RAM as you want. I would give him at least 8 gigs of RAM. 16 would be better. It's all going to come down to your budget, obviously. I would get a 512 gig hard drive. If you can afford it, a terabyte's better. But
And this is the Lenovo? Or
Lenovo ThinkPad. And I'd look at the T480, but you could also look. Actually, they have a 490 now. Let me see if the 490 is.
That's another brand?
That's all. This is just ThinkPads. These are the ThinkPad line.
Oh, okay.
The T-Series. I think for a 15-inch ThinkPad, you might have to go with a P-Series. So they have the X-Series. They have the T-Series. The X-Series is thin and light, not so good battery life. The T-Series is a little less expensive, more business-oriented. Their most powerful ones are the P-Series, P as in Paul, and I'm pretty sure you can get a 15-inch P, and I know you can get it without touch. Yeah, they make a 15-inch P. Those are amazing workstations.
Okay. And
it really comes down to your budget. So I'm looking at a P53, for instance. Starts at $1,000, 15.6 inches. You can get it without a touch display. That's a weird thing to ask for because these days almost all Windows PCs come with a touch display. But that's one advantage that Lenovo has. You can really choose the display you want.
Yeah, we're just not a high-tech family. I've tried a touch screen too because he wants the solid keyboard. He doesn't want the separating.
Best keyboard in the business is Lenovo ThinkPads. Best.
Okay.
So I'd say ThinkPad T as in Tom. Yeah, over the last 4 years, T as in Tom or P as in Paul series. The P's are 15 inches. They're a little heavier, 4 pounds, but they have much better battery life as a result. They are for students, engineers, designers. They're powerhouses.
Okay.
And they're not expensive. They're very affordable. I think I would look at a P53 is probably what you want to look at. ThinkPad, Lenovo.com. Look at the ThinkPad P53.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I told him I knew it, guys.
So yeah. These have numeric keypads. They're 15 inches. They have no touch. They're really nice.
All right. That sounds like what he's looking.
All right. Good to talk to you.
Okay. Thank you
Take
so
care.
Much.
My Bye, pleasure. Leo. Bye-bye. Yeah, Rob, these all come with the P-Series all come with, all the 15 inches come with numeric pads. He's living in Funky Town. Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. He talks about gizmos and gadgets every week on the show. That's why we call him our Giz Wiz. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal?
I am great. How are you?
I'm super, too.
Happy holidays. Do you have the fiber? Oh, I see it behind you.
Oh, my gosh. Ta-da!
The fiber optic Christmas tree is over his left shoulder, right shoulder.
Exactly. Yep. From Pride and Glory, I think, was the movie.
It's a long story. Ask him next time you see him.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a movie prop that they left behind on his boat.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
So, gosh, we're getting close to the holidays, but you know what that means? CES is just around the corner.
Oh, my God.
Are you ready?
Yeah. I know. It's like when I walk in the front door, I stop and I go, again?
I just realized I was checking because I wasn't sure when I was there last.
Didn't you go for Ford 1 year?
Yeah. We used to have a booth in the South Hall for our podcast network. We didn't go for Ford. Ford was one of our sponsors.
Okay.
But I interviewed Alan Mulally. He was the CEO at the time. It was a lot of fun. The last time I was at CES was 2012. So this will be, and I realize it takes about 8 years to forget how painful it is.
Yes.
And now I have, and I'm going back. So I'll meet you there. We're going to go do a little tour of the Sands basement, I think, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's where the stuff that I need is.
I can't wait. all the junky stuff. Do you make appointments or you just show up?
I just show up.
Yeah.
No, I already have at least 250 emails. Oh, we just need 40 minutes of your time.
I don't want a briefing.
One year for laughs. I took all the emails and I added up all the time. I have to be there for 3 weeks.
It's only a four-day show.
And you can't get around.
Well, you have to add a half hour to every meeting because it takes you that long just to walk across the hall.
I know. I remember I had a friend who worked at NBC, and he called me one morning at 10 o'clock, and he said, my producer has four neat gadgets, and could you run and get them and go to the NBC Broadcast Center?
I'll be right back tomorrow.
And talk about them. I said, that's impossible. He said, you have 2 hours.
Oh, yeah, no. Not going to happen. Yeah. So you and I will convene. I'm going to have Sam, our car guy, Sam Abulsamid, on Tuesday afternoon, is going to give us a tour of the, you know, there's a lot of automotive stuff.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, including the new Ford, my new Ford, the Mach-E Mustang, the electric Ford. Yeah, I'm going to get that next year. Then we're going to go see the home theater stuff with Scott Wilkinson is going to give us a tour.
Oh, okay, great.
We have an IoT expert, Stacey Higginbotham. She's going to take us through all the Internet of Things stuff. But I realized I got nobody to show me all the junk.
Oh, yeah, the cheap crap expert.
Dick CCP. Martello, the CCP. He's going to show us
CCP.
The junk. So we got to set
Twitch
up a
official
time.
CCP.
I do want to make an appointment with you so we can have an hour or two.
Okay, we're at the same hotel, so it'll work out.
Yeah, we're next door, huh? Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a nice hotel. Oh, I like it because you can walk over.
It's great. Yeah. I stayed there 1 year, and I thought, it's wildly expensive, but my gosh, if you get something, you are literally 300 feet away.
The irony is, to get to the Sands, you're going to have to take a cab.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Okay.
We'll do it together. The cab's on me.
Oh, okay. Very good. Also, but there's a shuttle bus that runs every
that's
10 minutes
easy.
From India. Yeah, we could do that too.
So before, this is the pre-CES gadgets because he hasn't seen the junk in the basement at the Sands yet.
No. Well, I predicated on all the disco music you play every week.
Yes.
I found some. Amazon said new for 2019, but these have been around for a long time. So 40 years ago, I spent $180 for the first
Walkman.
Now, 40 years later, I spent $18.
Oh, my God. It's the same thing.
Well, Leo, it is my cassette capture deck.
All you need is a cassette. Where do you get those?
Well, boxes of cassettes.
Oh, okay.
So this comes with a little USB cable.
Do they
and
still sell cassettes?
No. I'm just talking about boxes of cassettes that I made myself. You know, back in the day.
Oh, those old mixtapes.
Yeah. You know, I had twin turntables, and I had a device called the Beatmaster.
Oh, yeah,
Not the guy that we love
in
the chat room.
No.
The Beatmaster would measure the beats on each turntable, and then you could slow down the speed up the turntables until the LEDs were bouncing up and down at the same speed. Then you could crossfade, and the beat would stay the same, and you would make a professional-sounding disco tape.
You know what's hysterical? You showed that original Sony Walkman. That's hip with the kids again because of the movie Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yes, yes. And not only that, but I see them on eBay for $600 and $700.
The kids want those.
Well, they ain't getting this one.
No. I wish I still had my old Walkman. I loved that thing. That was amazing. If you walked, it would wow. If you walked down the street, the bumping of the Walkman would make the music would It got better over time. So what is this thing? It looks like a Walkman.
So this is really neat. It's $18, okay?
Cheap.
Cheap. So it comes with a disc which has the software on it to convert your tapes into MP3 players.
So this is a digitizer.
It's a little digitizer.
$18?
Yes. Leo, if you don't want to spend $18, I just went on Amazon. Someone has the exact same thing for $16. Someone has the exact same thing for $31.
Oh.
So it's sort of pay what you want. So it comes with a little pair of earbuds because there's no speaker in it, because basically you're going to play it through your computer speaker as you digitize the cassettes.
So if you have old audio cassettes that you want to save forever, you got to digitize them. They're going to fall apart.
Yes, and this is an easy way to do it. So in the warehouse, I have a big old cassette player that had audio out that I could run to the computer. And then I thought, you know, I found more tapes I want to digitize. Isn't there an easier way than going to the warehouse? And then I saw this little guy, and I thought, well, here's an $18 solution. And I've already done hours of tapes, and they sound fine.
Amazing. Amazing. For 18 or less.
Or less. Yeah. Look, if you go to Amazon, check the one that's $15.99. In the picture, actually, they all pretty much use the same picture.
What?
So you know it's
funny.
The same thing. Yeah. They just give it a different name.
Best way to get this is to go to a Dick's site, gizwiz.biz. That's his home on the web, and click the button that says the Gizwiz is the tech guy, and there's a link right there. And that is a nice link to use because it gives him a little something.
To spend more money on Amazon. I get a mini credit.
What goes round comes round. Exactly. When you're there, play the What the Heck Is It contest, a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine, autographed by Dick. And we're getting close to like the last. Is this the last new Mad?
You'll be playing for the Mad 20. Which is 20 pages of new material, and they reprints to the rest.
Nice. But it'll be autographed, and that makes it extra.
It'll be autographed, and I'm in it with a piece of a new article.
Rules and information at gizwiz.biz. Dick's great podcast is at gizwiz.tv. And I'll see you next week. Then you're going to get a week off, and then it's off to Vegas.
Ta-da!
Thank you, Dickie D. Time is up for the tech guy this beautiful day. I thank you for being here. Thanks to Lady Laura, our musical director, Kim Schaffer, our phone angel. Most of all, thanks to you. If you called in, I really appreciate it. If you just listened, that's just as important. Thank you for doing it. We'll see you again next time. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, that's it for the tech guy show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T, it stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, Security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guys show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.